opening statement, then we'll open it up for questions. We have limited time, but I've sent you all information about the Workforce Development Roundtable, and we'll be following up with both the full video from this call as well as the full video from the Workforce Development Roundtable, which you can watch on our Facebook live stream starting at 3. So, Senator Braun?
Hey, good to be back with everybody. And yes, at 3 o'clock, Governor Holcomb and PJ McGrew, his executive director of workforce development back home, we'll be hosting a roundtable with them and several senators. So traveling the state for the entirety of my nearly 2.5 years, workforce development, along with rural broadband and affordable housing, have been the three things I hear most about, with probably workforce development being number one. Accentuated through the COVID saga, and here recently, even that issue was still up there paramount, especially in the discussion along with extended unemployment benefits. Most businesses that I talked to across the state had issues with that at its level, and for the time it was in place, even before the most recent extension until early September. So workforce, big deal back home in Indiana. We're going to talk about it with our own governor here today at 3 o'clock. Now open it up to any other questions you might have about that or other topics of the day.
And we have a limited amount of the senator's time today, so we're going to have to keep it to one question, and then if we can get through everybody who's on the call, we can do follow-up questions. But we'll start with Kristen with Fox 59.
Hi, Senator. Thank you for taking our questions today. I guess talking regarding this this discussion today, what are some of the biggest issues that you're hearing about following COVID especially? What are the industries right now that are most lacking, and how are you planning to address those needs for those skills?
So, ironically, these are issues that were in place pre-COVID. COVID probably accentuated them. And what I hear mostly traveling around the state from employers that their high demand, high wage jobs need better education at the secondary level. I've also noticed in places like Garrett High School, just west of Fort Wayne, have really taken it to that next level where they engage parents and students before they get in the middle school. They actually are building new homes as a class right across from their school. So they've also, like many rural schools, have gotten back into where metal, wood shop, industrial arts, some of the skills that are needed, along with technological ones, that oftentimes kind of get put aside with that kind of only emphasizing four-year degree trajectories. We do a great job with that in our state. This is to address what I hear, and as a business owner for 37 years prior to becoming a senator, in a place like Dubois County, Jasper, with historic low unemployment rates for a long time, we need more emphasis on that. So it's revisiting some of the old concerns, and of course, we've learned some lessons that have highlighted even more the need for it, especially rural broadband to go along with it.
Thanks, Christian. WSBT.
Yes, this is Ronnie Dawson, WSBT. Senator Braun, thank you for joining us this afternoon. I was wondering, Indiana just ended the extra $300 a week federal unemployment benefits, but now there's a federal proposal to give unemployed people around $180 a week to go back to work. Does that defeat the purpose of unemployment benefits, and what's your reaction to that proposal?
I think it does. It was clear that the states that did it early on, probably maybe a month ago, immediately went from having no job applicants to maybe 20, 30, 40 for some of those positions when they knew that those benefits were not going to be continued. I think roughly 24 states have done it, and it does shape up mostly along political lines. But I believe that is just another way of trying to keep the federal government involved in that marketplace that incentivizes people not to go back to work. That discussion over the last 2 months has dwarfed anything else about how there are so many jobs opened. We still have relatively high unemployment and that we were working at cross purposes initiated by the federal government. So I think that would be a mistake.
Thank you, Senator.
We have Wayne. Wayne in Fort Wayne. Okay, Caitlin, do we have you? Oh, sorry.
Caitlin or Brianna?
Brianna.
Oh, sorry. Hello, Senator Braun. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. So, of course, I did kind of want to just piggyback on the question, the answer you did just give, because I know you did say that you believe that unemployment benefits are creating unnecessary competition for businesses. Could you just elaborate on that just a little bit more?
Well, I think unemployment was designed, even when we entered COVID, to be there as a way to get through the crisis when government dislocated so many jobs by taking the approach that we probably did simply out of uncertainty. It was clear from talking to business owners over time that they did respect the workplace safety as it related to COVID for their employees and their customers. And Indiana, having an unemployment rate due to our, I think, good practices we have in place, was 3.5% pre-COVID. So most businesses, even from the CARES Act, which was done back in March of 2020, thought that the benefit at $600 a week was too much. That put it above the prevailing wage. And to be honest, businesses did a really good job out of maybe having some complications out of the gate due to uncertainty with maybe meatpacking, poultry processing plants. And even they fixed the environment to make it safe for employees and customers. So what I'm saying is when you have something out there like that crafted by the federal government, it doesn't make sense to extend it beyond any point in time when the indicators are you don't need it. And yes, it was the federal government competing with private enterprise. The federal government makes it tough enough in many instances with rules and regulations that are maybe over the top. Some of them are needed, but in this case, I think we'll find that once we debrief this, that the unemployment benefits extended the get back to work that was there clearly in a place like Indiana, the demand from employers and federal government was in the way.
Thank you. And do we have Caitlin Lang, Indianapolis Star?
Yeah. Hi, Senator. I wanted to change topics a little bit to talk about the voting rights bill. Is there anything in that that you would like to see either at the federal level or even if Indiana pursued on its own?
So when it comes to the For the People's Act, which if you look at it closely, you could maybe call it For Politicians Act. I came from the outside Main Street, and I know when I look at the details of it, this, number one, federalizes election law. It gets rid of photo voter ID. And by the way, 80% of the country thinks that's a bad idea, 62% of Democrats. Ballot harvesting, federal financing to some extent of elections. I think it's one thing after another that's been out there for a long time. And I think when you do that, you're not only changing the dynamic that was in place and working many places. I look at Indiana's law. To me, it's a model of maybe what other states ought to look at. Look at laws like in Delaware and New York, where they've got voting laws on their books that aren't as good as ours, and then they want to federalize it. So if you do that, I think you're going to end up promoting career politicians, and we do not need more of them. I ran against that. Ideas like term limits, getting rid of pensions that encourage people here to stay forever, and a lot of the other stuff that's already counter to what I think the founders had in mind, and that's to come serve, do your duty, get back to your business or farm, and that doesn't happen anymore. So I think, on the other hand, we need elections that are done to where everybody can vote easily. Look at Indiana's guidelines. I think it's the sweet spot. And make sure that a legal ballot is cast and a legal ballot counted, and you've got everybody happy. It does not take the federal government, searching, to find some way to change things where it was not intended to be that way constitutionally and I think would aggravate things, not make it better.
Thanks, Caitlin. We have Chris Davis, WIBC.
Senator, Democrats and Republicans have been far apart on infrastructure in both ideals and on price. Where do you see a compromise happening on this?
Well, price, if you recall, started at $2.7 trillion, then fell all the way to $2.3 trillion, then dropped to $1.7. And when you look at hard infrastructure, as the definition was when we passed our infrastructure bill back in Indiana, with the fortitude of having user fees to pay for it, which there's no pay for here. That's discussed kind of tangentially, not, you know, where you can really understand it, and a lot of that is gray. So the price tag is way out there in left field. You got to remember, this will end up where we borrow most of the money for whatever we do. There was discussion among this bipartisan group of talking about repurposing some of the unspent COVID funds, maybe looking at public partner, public-private partnerships, and doing things that are real pay-fors, not fake pay-fors. And in the 2.5 years I've been here, this is done in the context of being $18 trillion in debt when I got here, and we're nearly $28 trillion. And if you do this and the family plan bill that's soon to follow, which can be done with just 50 votes through reconciliation, we're going to be $32 trillion in debt. And their idea of raising revenues, more of a smokescreen, because very little of that will get through even on their side of the aisle. So again, we default to mostly borrowing from our kids and grandkids to do the infrastructure that we do need. We need to do what we did back in Indiana, have the political will to come up with real pay-fors.
Thanks. Indiana Public Media?
Yes. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking the time. Kind of shifting back to workforce, every source in the business community that I've talked to says you can't really talk about workforce and attracting new employees to the, and new employers to the state without talking about the rising healthcare costs and the ballooning costs that that has on employers. Is that something that you're working on? I know those are topics that you've spoken about in the past, but how is that related, and can you really have a substantial workforce conversation without talking about that?
You cannot really, because it's still the number one issue out here, highlighted by some of the weaknesses in the system as we navigated through COVID. But 13, 14 years ago, I took it on in my own business, believing that no one should ever go broke because they get sick or have a bad accident. Before you were required to do it, we reformed our own health plan and used the meager tools that the healthcare industry offers you. They do not want it to change. Hospitals, pharma, insurance, even practitioners benefit from the status quo. Until you make it consumer patient-driven to where we have as much knowledge about what we're buying, currently we do not, you get rid of the barriers to entry, you have full transparency, get rid of archaic things like networks, insider deals, pharmacy benefit managers, it'll persist. Sadly, there are only a few of us that have had the experience of how you can do something that would be affordable and that would work, and on the other side of the aisle, they're interested in a one-payer system. I call it the Bernie Sanders plan. So we'll get back to that this year. It had the most attention the first 9 months I was here. 80 senators weighed in, widely diverged, because most weren't even wanting to touch reforming the system. Most were wanting to go to some version of a one-payer system. And you're right. It is intertwined with the workplace in terms of keeping your people healthy. And if you do it in a system that avoids health care because you pay for wellness, you have your employees own their own well-being, and you give them the tools to do it, you have a plan like mine has become, where we haven't had premium increases in 13 years. I've had to step away from that. I talk about it all the time out here in D.C. Sadly, that's rolling your sleeves up, taking on difficult problems. Most don't engage in it out here.
Thank you. And we have Wish.
Yes, good afternoon, Senator. listening to the discussions that come out of D.C., is there any chance of a bipartisan deal on anything coming through the Senate? And as we listen to you, I think we continue to hear more frustration from when you ran in the campaign to growing over the past 2.5 years. Are you convinced you want to do this for another 6 years?
When I decided to do it in the first place, it was because I was frustrated with the system. And if honesty sounds like frustration, that's not the case. I'm as fired up as I was 2.5 years ago and have made a lot of headway on another topic we didn't talk about, Growing Climate Solutions Act. I was the first Republican to step out and discuss that. And that was so we don't end up getting another piece of crazy policy like the Green New Deal done that we can't afford. And ironically, there's a bipartisan bill that I marshaled that could get floor time here soon on an issue that many on my side of the aisle have not wanted to engage in. I believe Republicans and conservatives, if we're the party of no, or we're the party of we're not interested, we're going to find ourselves on the sidelines when it comes to these windows of opportunity when you have the levers of power in your favor. I was happy to see what the prior administration did on trying to reform health care. Every time they did an executive order, the health care industry took it to court. One did stick that I championed as a state legislator back in 2015, and that's for hospitals to make their charge master easy to read and to where they show that transparency of what things cost. No, I'm excited about things just don't move quickly here. A legislature like ours in Indiana, infrastructure, we took it on in a year and got a lot done. We had the political will to make hard decisions to go along with it. My observation has been confirmed here with what I saw before I ran. There's a lack of political will and a lack of people sticking their neck out because they're here for the long run. And if we had term limits, you'd fix that because you'd get people that have actually done things in the real world, solved problems, come here for a time, and it wouldn't get so partisan and in two camps. And I'm hoping that rubs off, and I intend to keep plowing away at it.
Thanks. And Adam, Wren, do we have you on the call? Adam, we got you? Okay. Has anyone else joined the call in the last 15 minutes that we missed in the opening? Okay. We have time for one more follow-up question. I'll start back at the top. Kristen, do you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, my follow-up question, Senator, would be regarding the infrastructure plan. So to follow up from what you were saying before, do you support this bipartisan plan that Senator Young and others in your party are backing?
So if you look at it and it has real pay-fors in there, not stuff that generally involves will pay for it years 6 through 10, and if it starts engaging in the way we did back home with like our community crossings grants that no one really liked the idea when it came to local and county government about having skin in the game. Skin in the game is the most powerful tool out there. I've proposed that as a way to let enterprising, financially sound states like Indiana have a greater share of federal dollars. If it starts incorporating some of that into it, I'm possibly going to be for it. If it gets above that price tag of what we're talking about currently, around $1 trillion, and it doesn't have clear pay-fors, I'll have to wear my fiscal hawk hat, and I'll vote against it on that principle. If it's going to borrow more money from our kids and grandkids, that doesn't make sense. You can't get by with that anywhere else, and that'll be the way I measure it once we get down closer to the finish line.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you all for joining the call. Thank you to the Senate Republican Conference for hosting us, and we'll follow up with this clip as well as the clip from the governor or roundtable with Governor Holcomb later today. Appreciate it all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.